They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us today, I have Jason Halverson, who's taken country by storm, and they've started a whole new wonderful program, and we're going to hear all about it. But unfortunately, before he took this route, he ended up with some serious problems. And so we're going to talk about that, including threats of fines of $500 a day by the city council, not a homeowners association this week, but a city council. Jason, thank you so much for joining us. Please tell us your story. $500 a day, that's ridiculous.
Yes, very ridiculous. But first of all, thank you so much for having us on. I just wanted to say my wife couldn't make it, but she sends her love and regrets and is just so excited to tell our story. And she is a big part of it, so I always like to mention her. We kind of are a true marriage in a garden as well. So, but our story kind of started in the bad economic times, to be truthful. I could go way, way back, but I'll start to just, you know, the downturn in the housing market and our economy crashing and a loss of a job and coupled with some other factors of, you know, some questionable food sources. So, being the fact that my wife tended to like a lot of the organic food products and those products that tended to be very expensive, especially back then, and so then the economy crashing, we decided, you know, we need to maybe think about growing some of our food ourselves and save some money. And actually, it started with the basil. My wife's Italian, and she loves basil, of course, cooks with it in everything almost, and I do too. Mm-hmm. And she wanted organic basil, so I went to the store and got like $6.50, $7 for some basil, and brought it home, had some great meals, and then about 2 days later, she said, "Hey, I need some more basil." I was like, "Whoa!"
That went fast.
That was only a couple of days, and this is going to get expensive quick. I said, "Well, why don't we get a basil plant?" And we did, and it was successful. We saved a fortune, and then that kind of spread over to a little side yard, that then spread over to a bigger side yard. So then I realized that, I spend just as much time either mowing or doing something with the other part of the yard, and I hate it, by the way, and grew up in Florida mowing yards way too much, guys. It's not fun down here at all.
Oh, that's St. Augustine grass, huh?
Just all the grasses. You know, I laugh at that. That's another story in itself, but have you ever gone up to talk to a guy mowing the yard? No, nobody ever goes to that guy because he's a big dust cloud of yard mowing noisiness and grass clippings and allergy nightmare. You just keep on walking, right?
Yeah.
Well, not the case with the garden. But so we decided to do the whole front yard, and it was where the sun was. So it wasn't like we chose that. Our backyard's completely covered by oak trees, mostly by other neighbors' trees. We couldn't even do anything about that. We wouldn't want to, but, so that was the choice. Sun is where the sun shines, and that's where we put the garden. We got some books. You know, she was born in Jamaica, Queens, New York, and I was a suburb out here of Central Florida. You know,
mm-hmm.
Never saw really farms or chickens or any of that stuff. And so this was all new to us in terms of that. And we did research and basically got started. And apparently we were really lucky on the first one because everything, it was just bountiful with bounties. And man, it's more food than I could deal with to the point that now all of a sudden we were doing more research on canning.
Wow.
And preserving and pickling, and wow, we never even thought how much food we could get out of this. And then we realized, everybody says you can't grow vegetables in Florida. In Florida, I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
We have sun year round.
Yeah. Yeah.
But why wouldn't we be able to? And our hot season is challenging, but there's a lot of plants that can deal with it. You just got to figure it out. But what happens is a lot of the northern retirees come down here to retire, and they bring their growing skills from up there down here, and they fail miserably, and of course they should.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different game. So, but to that extent, on the second growing season comes the notice of the mail saying the city tells us we have to remove our vegetable garden and replace it with ground cover.
Well, it is ground cover, isn't it? It's edible ground cover. You're covering the ground.
Exactly. That's where the debate, it was just absurd. Usually, if anybody knows HOAs, and even in the cities, most of the typical ways of when you have a yard violation, you usually get a little stake with a red card, and at least that's how they do it in most of Florida. And so, everybody gets to see that your yard's in violation, and they have such and such time to fix it, or they're going to pay, yada, yada. Well, we didn't get that. We got our little private one in the mail. Which is very unusual, and it's typically not the way it goes about. Only time that might go about is if there's, something political going on. But in this case, I think they knew what they were stepping into from the very beginning. And from that point on, they were bullies, as so many, positions of power, whether it's an HOA council or a city council or county council, they tend to have some positions of power in the use there of it. And so it was typical bullying at that point in time. To the point I said, are you telling me the only solution, there is no other option, that we can't do some kind of compromise, that we can do design, we can't add mulch, there's nothing I can do except to dig up this vegetable garden and replace it with ground cover, of which they had then had given us by that time a short list of options.
But Jason, just a minute. Why should you even get permission from them to plant whatever you want in your own yard?
Exactly. This is not an HOA. This is city property.
Well, even in HOAs.
Give you a little bit more detail. It's on the dead end I-4. But even in HOA, I agree with you, especially if we're, willing to maintain, impacts, as I call them. I have a swale completely around, if nobody knows what that is. It doesn't allow water runoff from my property. I capture all my water. And even major storm events, I capture it. We don't use foul pesticides or poisons. All the other yards do, by the way,
yeah.
In terms of fertilizers and stuff. But we don't. So we're not impacting any stormwater, lakes or rivers or anything like that. We have literally no impact. So, that's the thing that I think a measurement should be done by, not whether or not one person or the other might think it's pretty.
That's right.
That's ludicrous. That's a weird scale. You're never, where's the scale on that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I absolutely agree. So, did someone turn you in, or is the city roaming around looking for?
And this story gets even more ludicrous. And this is, where it started and then where it ended up propelling to, is a fun kind of story as well. The landlord of our neighbors, they live in Puerto Rico, and not here is my point, in terms of they aren't a part of the neighborhood. They're not neighbors. They don't get involved in the community. They don't even have to look at any of it. They're in Puerto Rico. That's what makes it even more odd. But they're the ones who complained about the garden, come to find out originally.
Complained to the city.
They complained to the city. They backed up and changed their story and said that it wasn't a complaint. It was more of a question. which we don't care one way or another. Their tenants at the time were very good friends of ours. Their daughter played in the garden, played with our chickens. It was a happy neighborhood. We're on a dead-end street to a major interstate, so most everybody here is a renter because these houses, you know, most homeowners were the mm-hmm. we're the only homeowners that own and live here. Most every place else is a house that has a renter in it because the homeowners have usually moved on to better places than next to the interstate. It was ludicrous that the one would even complain. Like I said, it's not even an eyesore to them. They don't even have to look at it. It's obviously not affecting the rent. The renters love us. it was just a complete ludicrous thing. But it was really the city, once the code enforcement department, had gotten a hold of that. And like I said, they could have been accurate and said it was just a question, and that code enforcement agency just took that question and ran with it. and that could have been the way it went down. I'm not quite sure. I've heard quite a few stories, don't get me wrong. But it is really irrelevant. It's really the city that turned into the bully.
Yeah.
To the point that the landlords kind of backed off even, they've got new tenants now, and there's no animosity or anything there of extent. They came out in public and said they're fine with gardens. They were more concerned about a few things, of which we've clearly replied to and responded to and have answered and made them at ease, and that's what a neighborly person would do, and why they should have just came to us in the first place.
But, Jason, I mean, your yard doesn't impact them in the least, right? I mean, you're not encroaching on their property.
Like I said, the only impact we are getting in any way is that their tenants are always receiving vegetables and chicken eggs from us.
Oh, that's terrible.
Because we're neighborly people. And
can I live next door to you?
It's important to us, so we like to, spread the joy.
Can I move next door to you? My neighbors don't bring me chickens and eggs and vegetables.
Exactly. Or let your little girls grow vegetables herself and then pull the carrots out. By the way, I guess Bugs Bunny's not around anymore because most every kid doesn't know a carrot comes out of a ground anymore.
I know.
It's scary.
My daughter tried to plant a baby brother. When she was little, she tried to plant a baby brother so she'd have someone to marry when she grew up. She was 2 and a half.
But so that's, the ludicrousy of the story and then how it got propelled by the city and how it got picked up by the city. Basically, they bully you. They said, okay, you're paying $500 a day because you've already passed your 30 days or whatever it was. I had to change it. And I said, well, I'm challenging it. I disagree with this altogether. I want to get in front of somebody that makes, a board that makes decisions. And they said that was the code enforcement board. And they meet every 2 to 3 months. And I was like, and they just had one, so it was going to be almost 3 months before their meeting. And he said, well, then you'll be able to, say your keep, but if they still fine you at fault, then you will have to pay the fines back to the beginning day, which was $500 a day, 3 months later.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, so just to get in the game, just to play in their game, it was going to be a huge cost. massive cost if we lost. So nobody in their right mind that has any money, we didn't. So, we were like, well, then you'll just take our money we don't have. So
pay them in chickens.
We're fighting for it. I over and over try to express to these people that this was our food source. It really was no different than somebody kicking in our door and stealing our steak off the table. This was and it still is, and actually more than now, probably 75% of our food source. It was probably close to 50 back then. And because we've gotten a lot better at canning and preserving, that's why it's been able to stretch it, because now we're even getting food in the periods where we, are cropping and harvesting. So, and people just, that's what I try to, what our message will grow into as you hear the rest of this ludicrous story. But at that point in time, we said, we're going to fight you. We're going to risk it. We have no idea what to do, but this is just stupid. And we prayed on it, and it was just like, we're doing it. We're fighting. So it was November, election day, big election day, so, you know, everybody was out. And we're standing in line to vote. Of course, that's always a fun thing. In Florida, they deter people from voting. But we're realizing this line, we should be talking to these people and get some signatures for our fight. You know, these are all our neighbors, right? I mean, these are all our neighbors. You know, why don't we get some of these people behind us? Because we're about to lose our front yard garden in a couple of months when we go up against this board here. So we're like, all right. So I run home and typed up a petition really quick, and actually somebody told us to do it on change.org because it gets more publicity and then we can go check it out. So literally I came home, sat on change.org, typed up this petition really fast, made it all up quick. Now, I do have some experience in building industry, so I have, you know, some help in my past to do that. Printed it out and lined so people could sign it and ran back there, and then, of course, had the one online already there, and we sat there all day in the voting line and talked to people. Our sign said basically petition to allow vegetable gardens. and you know, because you're sitting there with a petition that, you know, I know I've done it a few times because I am in a hurry sometimes too. You know, you're like, no, I've already done that. And you just kind of look down at your feet and keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
And you would hear, we would say, you know, we just want to have you look at our petition to allow the vegetable gardens. And man, we had so many people almost had whiplash turning their head going, what? Did I just hear that right? A petition to allow what? vegetable garden? Why can't you have a vegetable garden?
Yeah.
And then the discussion would happen. And we would talk to them, and they would sign our petition.
How many signatures did you collect?
That day alone, we had signed just in those lines. My wife, you know, I kind of had more of the day shift. She had more of the night shift, and we had a lot of time together. About 275 signatures of our neighbors, again, I want to point out. These are our immediate voting district neighbors.
Wow.
So it was beautiful. I mean, it was just unbelievable how quickly, you know, we were like, okay, there's a chance that this logic's going to win here. We got 250 people. We were so hopeful. The very next day, the news, local news channel calls us, TV news channel, and wants us to come out immediately. They want to get us on that night. And we're like, whoa, ooh, wait, and it's crazy. My wife comes running home from work and get all, you know, kind of our clothes in decent, you know, because we're farmers. We're not used to being our cameras. Again, the vanity thing. And basically just did it. You know, there was no preparation to go anything. And from that point on, it just kind of went on from one steamroller to another. It was truly amazing. You know, the support from the local community, the support that then change.org gathered. I mean, we had so many people from all over the world. It's ridiculous. So we had a second petition launched by Kitchen Gardeners International, which I'm a big promotion of guys. It's called KGI for short. Go to the website, donate to them. They do amazing things to help support things just like this and have been amazingly successful at it. They had a sister petition going on, the other, it's not change.org, it's causes.com. So between the two of us, we're up to like 12,000 signatures.
Wow.
We keep it going so we can give it to other people for when it happens to them. And yes, it's still happening to people. It's really absurd.
Yes.
The Institute for Justice, I call the modern day Hall of Justice because they're like little superheroes in legal matters.
They are. They're wonderful.
They came to our rescue and support. They never needed to do anything because it never went to the law purposes, but they were always in the back corner. We launched the Patriot Garden campaign, which is at patriotgarden.com. They paid for all the fines and the fees, and we're sending all those out. We have probably, I think, somewhere around 1,000 Patriot Garden signs go out. We had so much interest, we had to, you know, keep the Patriot Garden signs just for the Orlando sign-ups.
So tell us a little bit about the Patriot Garden. What is that?
It was a campaign that, you know, because of the steam by which we were gaining in supporters and the way the city had been ployed, now you could see the positioning. They were going for a long haul, hoping all this publicity would go away, and then they can make their not-so-savory decision, probably. We wanted to maintain the interest. We wanted to maintain the awareness. And that was really what we realized early on, was this wasn't about our garden anymore. This stupid little garden next to I-4 was not it. And it's 25 foot. I mean, most people's living rooms are bigger. I mean, they make it sound like we went farming or something. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And that's how we kind of win this battle, and how we have to win this battle in the future, is definition. But basically, it was ludicrous. And so we wanted to keep the awareness going. We wanted to keep the fight going for everybody. We had already met through email and phone conversations a lot of other victims before us. They were contacting us and giving us support, but giving us great advice and telling us basically why they didn't win, or, you know, where they had hiccups, or the lessons learned, so to speak. And so we felt we had to just help carry it on. There was just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We all of a sudden just believed so much about this, and were so passionate about this, and it's clearly given a torch. We were well stepped up to carrying it. So, and so that's why we did the Patriot Garden campaign. It was basically a simple campaign of plant the seed and change the law. You sign up, we'll send you the sign, and we send you radish seed. You planted it out in front of your yard and let everybody know. It had the website on it and spread the news, basically. And we picked Patriot Garden, my wife and I, just for obvious reasons to me.
Yeah.
Here we are. You know, we started because of economic reasons. It was a victory garden back in the day. it's been called various things by our government, I might add. and so the next step just seemed to be logically the Patriot Garden, and so that's why we named it that. And so that was a big success. At that point, the city now started referring to us as experts. Like I said, we had just started. By far, are we experts? Even to this day, I don't call myself an expert, even though we're teaching more and more people how to do it. They completely flipped. The table flipped. They now, went from being at war with us to being at friends with us. They've asked us to speak at conferences on their behalf on how to do this better, how to pass laws, how to write the wording in the right way, yada, yada. And so we became this bureaucratic expert and landscape expert all in one between my wife. My wife ended up going to get her Master Gardening Volunteering Certification in the meantime to get more knowledge and expertise now that we're this label. And that's basically after almost 2 years, we ended up writing an ordinance that is about as ludicrous as it is. I mean, it's stupid as stupid gets. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's really dumb how much money was wasted, man hours in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars was probably wasted on this stupid ordinance.
Absolutely.
And it's like, and when it's all said and done, our yard is completely 100% acceptable, which basically is about as big as anybody that's going to get. and so you accomplish absolutely nothing. Everything's okay.
Let me ask you, Jason, you never did pay a fine.
No, we never did pay a single fine. They eventually dropped the fine. They retracted the violation. I'm not even sure if the violation even shows up on a record, because in our system, because it's a computer system, it just stays in there forever. There's ones, when we had tenants when I was away at school, that they, had a broken down old car out front or something like that still on there and stuff. But I don't even think it's on our record anymore.
I mean, how ludicrous, these criminals who had planted vegetables in their garden. I mean, that's a crime.
Exactly. And still to the point, even at the end when the mayor, they approved the ordinance, they're going to allow vegetable gardens, they gave him his little, 30-second interview with the news. He goes, yeah, we're going to allow gardens, but we still prefer you put them in the backyard.
But you said
he never got it,
At the beginning, you said that you couldn't grow anything in your backyard because of all the trees, and you didn't want to do anything about your neighbor's trees. And that tells me that you're willing to live and let live, so you moved where the sun was.
Where, you know, the story came from us was, what I love to tell about the grass stories was a trip my wife and I took to Africa. My godbrother was in the Peace Corps, so we took advantage of his language skills and his whereabouts and safety and stuff. So it was a great trip, awakening to us. But we were having a lot of conversations with, you know, the natives. And wonderful people, just a wonderful, wonderful, caring, welcoming people, the Tanzanians. But it was amazing. We'd be sharing our culture. They were like, oh, where do you live? We live in the city. Oh, wow, you have land. What do you do with your land? We're like, we mow it.
Yeah.
Mow it. What do you mow it? What do you mow? What's the crop? And we're like, well, it's grass. And like, you eat grass. And we're like, no. Well, what do you do with the grass? Is there some use for grass? We need it medicinal? No. Well, we actually throw the grass away. You throw the grass away. Well, actually, we pay a guy to come pick it up and throw it away. If you want to know the truth, you pay a guy to come pick it up, and you're so. All of a sudden, this, you know, whole we're an advanced culture thing goes away really quick.
Yeah.
Stupid things. Yeah. Why are you eating grass? Or no, this is stupid.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just, you know, was another one of those reasons of why we decided this was a better way, you know. We use all micro irrigation systems and rain harvesting systems and, you know, I'm very, like I said, we capture all the water. We're very protective of our water. These are all good things. These are all good things that somebody should get a pat on the back for. I'm not told that you got to dig it all up.
I'm amazed. I'm absolutely amazed because this is exactly, you know, you look at all the problems, you look at all the issues that we're facing as a global community. And you have people, and I know that we're going to get to something else that you're doing, but, you know, here you have people who have found, honest to goodness, real solutions to some of the issues and some of the problems, and then they're getting beaten up by the bullies in the city council. With your own government, instead of saying, thank you, Jason and Jennifer, thank you for showing us the way, they're threatening to fine you $500 a day. That's insane.
But just it becomes just so apparent, and that's what I'm loving about this whole movement. Is it's just it's obvious to us now that it's just power trips and it's just bullies.
Yeah.
We just have to realize that we unfortunately our leadership system of way it evolves here in the United States has promoted those power-hungry, egotistical bullies, for the most part. Now, they're not all 100%, but, man, it's definitely getting more and more to that scale.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the problem we got to fix. We've got to fix that problem because they had not one argument. I asked them, I said, I've got studies here, I've got facts here, I've got this and that. Can you show me one study where a vegetable garden has affected one in any way property value? Because that was their major argument, right? Property value. Of course, I thought it was hilarious after we just had the biggest collapse in our history.
Yeah.
Who took this make-believe value and brought it down to its knees overnight.
Yeah.
Tell me about this property value you keep speaking of.
Yeah. No, that's the carrot, if you will, that they use to get people to just follow them blindly without questioning it. But I do know there was a lady that I was in touch with a few years ago in Indiana who actually lost her home because she was a gardener as well. And she had a compost pile. And it was not, it didn't smell. There was no problem with it, but the neighbor didn't like it and complained to the HOA. Ultimately, she ended up losing her house. It was foreclosed on because of a compost pile, and she wanted to grow organic food.
It's a shame. It's a shame. But that's what I love to hear. Love to hear these stories because we're overcoming them more and more. You know, the Institute for Justice is fighting down in South Miami a 17-year-old front yard garden was dug up. After 17 years of being there with not a complaint, the owner, one of the husband and wife, one of them was an architect. So, I mean, this had design behind it. I'm, by the way, architectural background. I never got licensed, but I worked in a lot of those offices and stuff in construction and building industry. So ours has some design, too, to the point now we do actually, we can get them into HOAs. We can approve a lot of our edible landscapes for HOAs. It's not ideal in terms of traditional gardening, but it is edible and it is beautiful and it's always aromatic, and we can get those approved. And that's what I tell people is there's good news. We're figuring out how to beat them down and get things through and getting things acceptable, whether it's HOAs or the cities or the counties. And that's the good news, you know, and that will be the good news is because we are starting to wake up to these bullies and realizing they're just, you know, you're just trying to shove what you want down my throat, and that's not a good reason.
So wait a minute, Jason, you're actually going into HOAs and training homeowners how to grow gardens and vegetable gardens. I mean, a lot of places are dead set against xeriscaping. In Florida, it's St. Augustine grass. You've got to have that, and you've got to water it even when you have droughts. You know, we don't care about the community. We want to make sure that you don't have any brown spots, so water away.
You got it. We are getting better and better at that. A lot of what we do in terms of our presentations, and that's what we'll enter into, is from all of this, it has evolved into a charity called Growing Food. It's fairly simple. We're growing food. It's a byline of yard and food sharing. And the concept is pretty simple. Grow your food. If you can't grow your own food and you have land by which food can be grown on, well, we want that land, and you can donate that to us. And when you do donate that to us, if you so wish, we can write it up as a lease, and you can just give that to the IRS as a tax deduction or write-off as a donation. Our point is what we realize through all of this is it's amazing how much just some awareness can change. You know, one of the first things we did with the Patriot Garden campaign and our whole campaign was a photo. We actually had a little, you know, business card photo of us in our front yard garden and vegetables and how pretty it looked. And everybody looks at that picture and goes, wow, that's really pretty.
It is pretty.
Because that was the biggest hang-up, right? It was about the prettiness, right? And then they look at the other 6 yards, 12 yards in the neighborhood, they're like, these are all ugly brown grass. I mean, that's, you know, because it was, you know, at that time, a good chunk of the fight was over the wintertime, and a lot of it's bahia here, and it dies off and browns in the wintertime. For a good 4 months, I might add sometimes, depends on our winters. But, so, you know, they really have an unattractive brownscape.
Yeah.
For months, and that's acceptable. That is all good. But yeah. Our beautifully green garden filled with food was, you know, uncomfortable to people because they had this connotation that it was a farm, agriculture. And that is another point of where all this comes in. When dealing with the cities and the counties, we're going to be redefining things. That's just the bottom line. Is the city originally came after us under that ploy that this was an agricultural use. We had changed uses. We were in a residentially zoned use, and now we were producing agriculture. Now, the benefit of us in our scale was just that, was luckily they had defined agriculture to a fairly big extent in terms of labeling examples of silos, tractors, dust clouds, fertilizer poisons, all these things that would be at a farm, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a farm. And so we could quickly, you know, thanks to the Institute for Justice, could say, you know, none of these things exist on this residential garden. This is a vegetable garden for private food. And so, you know, that was a major argument in terms of we have to redefine what agriculture is again, guys. Just because we are growing our own food does not make us agriculture.
How big is your garden?
A few chickens does not make us agriculture. It just, you know, that definition needed to be updated. You know, that's the bottom line. What was your question?
How big is your garden? It's not a huge garden. It's not.
It's 25 foot by 25 foot, which is, like I said, the size of the large living rooms nowadays.
And I read someplace that they wanted you to limit it to less than...
Well, when they first started the fight, they had some ridiculous percentages they were going to allow and not allow. And again, our battle there was the sun. You know, if you limited us to these setbacks and percentage maximums and this maximums and height maximums, you basically pushed the whole garden into the shade of the house. No matter who you were, you know, I mean, if you had a house on any property, that's what this design was going to do. And so it was obviously not going to, luckily we called them out on that one. You know, we had a local architect engineer buddy of mine do 3D sun schematics to prove our point, and they clearly, again, they're going to be bullies. They really usually don't bring evidence to the table.
No.
So if you bring evidence to the table, you're pretty much going to win.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, you know, that's how it propelled. And so now we started, you know, the growing food. Basically, we help people start growing themselves. We do this in a lot of different ways. A lot of people just want to pay us to come install the gardens to begin with and teach them how to do it. Right there at their house, they have the money to do so. We put the money towards the donations, and there we go. What we do with them is we ask them to give 10% of their harvest back to us so we can feed those in need, as a thank you for their spiritual food and food that mm-hmm. we've given them. After that, we have the examples of churches, schools, larger businesses that have lots of land around. And want to do it. So what we'll do there is we go in there again, teach a big class so everybody gets to learn how to do it at home. But then we leave a garden at that particular, venue, and they now are producing food to feed the hungry for their purposes. And again, what we ask for is that 10% back. And then they go off and keep gardening. And usually what happens is not only is the garden there at the facility, but those people took it back to their house as well. And so we're getting the 10% from their houses as well as a donation. Here in Florida, we have a lot of retirees with a lot of land. And ironically, they pay a lot of money to have people mow them.
And so
what they do is say, hey, we have a sunny land. We want to donate to you so you can grow food for the hungry is what we do. In that case, is we grow the food, give most of that to the hungry, and then we give the smaller percentage to the landowner that, you know, helped us, donated the land to us.
You're amazing. You're absolutely amazing. This is such a wonderful program.
Yeah, well, it is just getting steam, you know, and the other what we do the most of is, again, what we started with, awareness. Is, you know, we love to just get out and do presentations. We do it in our offices. We do them at schools. We do them at events. We have all kinds of different versions. We have spiritual versions for the churches. We have patriotic versions for the more political people. We have educational versions for the schools. You know, we really have, because this gardens respond to everything.
It's wonderful.
There's not a person that I can't get it to respond to. Because I know you need food.
What about the children? I mean, I think it's an incredible example that you're setting for the children. Because, as you pointed out, most kids don't know where their food comes from. They think it comes from the grocery store.
This is what I love about what you just said. It's just the opposite. The children are setting a wonderful example for the adults.
Yeah. Because they don't have preconceived.
It's so empowering.
Yeah.
To just give them a little bit of knowledge and then take it back to their parents and then watch their parents change. We do it, sweet potatoes grow here in Florida in the summertime like a week. It's my favorite crop. I don't have to do hardly anything to it. It'll except give it space. and then at the end, we harvest pounds and pounds and pounds of sweet potatoes. The average church will probably harvest about 300 pounds. Our yard harvests about 150 to 200 pounds.
Wow.
We're talking about hundreds of pounds of sweet potatoes you're taking to the soup kitchen of organic energy set. Now, this, I love, you know, what we do to help the homeless, but let's face it, in our tradition, it's usually the rock bottom lowest food. It is canned, that has been sitting, not only a canned food, but it has been sitting on the shelf for 2 years, and I now have decided I don't want it.
Yeah.
It is the vegetables that nobody else wants that are just left over at the market. It is the rock bottomest food.
Yes.
So to now take them the best food.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, we do event at one of our churches that, you know, we're actually a member of, and they do this Survive to Thrive event every year, and I love this event because it is just that. They're tired of this survive stuff. It's time to thrive, and it's a wonderful event for the homeless, and it really just changes it. I mean, it's like going to a day spa, but it's for home. I mean, they get foot massages, they get nature teas, they get bags and blankets, they get taken care of and pampered like you never believe. But they get food like you'd never believe. And they, man, we have a sweet potato contest on, you know, because now we've got 300 pounds of sweet potatoes. I cook them a couple of different ways. So, man, the different recipes you get from all those sweet potatoes. But it's the harvest. It's in the fall. And it's after church, and these kids will go out there and start it, because, of course, the kid wants to get some dirt, right? And then the parents will start watching. They're like, that looks like fun. And then the kid will say, yeah, this is so good. I want these for this. You really want to eat these? Yeah, we can cook them this way and this way, because we've taught them how to cook them. That's the other point, too. You got to give them the far end of it, too.
Yeah.
And before you know it, these parents will be in their Sunday dresses and their Sunday best, out there in the dirt, digging out sweet potatoes like they're digging for gold.
Oh, really?
It's sometimes hilarious because, you know, some really nice clothes are getting pretty dirty.
It's okay, they're washed.
and just because you get caught up to it, before you know it, you know, they're falling in the dirt, you know? And now they're spread out in the dirt. And just some of the pictures that you get mentally, it will just amaze you. And then to have that then come around in a couple of months, because sweet potatoes are best cured after 90 days, another little secret. And then they're sweet treats. Naturally sweet, I might add, the way you'll never get them in the store. And then you get them all cooked and prepared those different ways and by the heart and love. And that is life changing stuff. And that's what we like to show. This is not just about food, guys. We found out that front yard gardens are 100% better than backyard gardens every time. Because you're going to get to know your neighbors. You're going to share your food with your neighbors. Now they're going to share their food with you. And now, before you know it, you're going to go to the grocery store less and less and less and less. And you're going to also find that you have way too much food. And now you just took something that I don't know how many times I heard as a man, and I've done, you know, during these bad economic times, I went to a lot of men groups. I went to a lot of these types of things. I went to a lot of guys in the building industry, hopeless, say the phrase, how am I going to put food on the table for my family? And I told them, this is the easiest way. Forget going back to work right away. Start a garden.
Yeah.
You know, put food on the table again and feel good about yourself again. And before you know it, you'll get a job.
Yeah.
And before you know it, actually, is what most of us in our neighborhood, by the way, now all of us, kind of not all of us, but a great chunk of us, even these renters. I've got landlords now that just say, yeah, we don't mind if the renters do it. We know you're involved. Go ahead. Take it over. Well, you know, doesn't have to get mowed. So now we have a neighborhood of gardeners and food producers. We have guys who do tilapia and chickens and guinea pigs even. I never thought so, but hey, it happens and they're good.
Oh my gosh.
It's better than rabbits. It's just like a rabbit, but it
tastes
it's
like chicken, right?
It's not as cute. It's a little easier to eat.
Oh, that is really neat. That sounds like a lot of fun.
And so that's the story, and that's where, you know, it grows up to. And so that's what we love to show, is what every one of us can do at any time and change it just like that. And the best way to do it is to start growing some vegetables in the front yard, and before you know it, the neighbors will start coming by it is the equivalent of setting up like a haunted house in your front yard. I mean, people literally start to just walk by nonchalantly like they're not looking.
And
then they'll look a little bit more, and then, you know, they'll be like, just flat out gazing, and then they'll ask a question or two. It's like you literally, you know, we're not burying anybody. We promise. It's just vegetables.
It's just vegetables. And has this introduced you to more of your neighbors than you knew before? Obviously,
by leaps and bounds. By leaps and bounds. You know, Jennifer and I, like I said, were brought up in that. Well, work your tail to the bone, watch a TV generation. You know, you usually got home from work, did a few things around the house, watched TV, maybe waved to your neighbor as you drove by, right? I mean, that's pretty much how it was. You know, you kind of knew some of them. A couple of them, you might say, you know, not my type, so to speak, so you never even really were interested in getting to know each other at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the beauty of it. It was, you know, once you start talking about food and sharing how to, you know, I do this or I got some of these seeds or this or that, you now are everybody's type. So, you know, it doesn't matter what they do or what they, you know, because when you talk to them, you're usually talking about food.
Well, you have
know
some...
what? Everybody needs food.
Yeah. Well, you have something in common. How about taking it a little bit beyond just the growing? You talked about sweet potatoes and recipes, but it sounds like you've got a very diverse neighborhood. Has this expanded? Maybe is there a cookbook in the future with different people bringing their own recipes for sweet potatoes or basil or whatever it is that you're doing?
Our first step is going to be a website. We just received our first grant, thanks to the First Green Bank, as seed money to pay for our 501c3 status and launch the website. Our website is hopefully going to eventually get to the point we need to, but it is going to be socially dynamic. Because we have a volunteer calendar for where we're installing on people's donated yards. And I want to point out, let's go back to those donated yards. And in the 3 short months that we've kind of been in existence here as Growing Food, we have already obtained donated over 20 acres of land to grow food for the hungry.
I think that's amazing. Now, you told me when I talked to you yesterday, you told me that the city is, you're not quite done with the city. They don't like this.
Oh, no. Well, it's not necessarily a city. It's going to be counties. It's going to be other cities. But where these now people have given us all these chunks of land, this 20 acres is all spread out throughout the greater Central Florida area. Some of them in 1 acre chunks, 2 acre chunks, but a lot of them are going to be, you know, usually in your quarter acre chunk. What again now comes up to the debate is, are we taking residentially zoned properties and turning them into agriculture, and you know, profiteering from them? Now, because we're a charity and a ministry, we feel we have a lot of defense there to that, and so we're getting on board to take on another fight, it looks like, because we can't turn this away. I mean, you know, it was a tough discussion in our board of directors. I'll you know, point out right off the bat, because, you know, do we move forward or do we take on? We can't risk other people's, you know, we can't risk for them. It's their property. So, you know, if they're getting fined, you know, it's easier for, you know, Jennifer and I to say, okay, we're going to take the hit and risk getting fined. But it's hard to do that for somebody else's land. So we have to get the legal precedent first, or somebody to take that risk first. But as we're starting to build up that defense, it is what we're moving to, because there's just, we have the solution here. 20 acres of land in Central Florida basically feeds the homeless. You're just taking care of your homeless situation.
And that's
right
incredible.
There.
That's
right.
Now, who's going to maintain these gardens? You're going to set them up and the owners are going to maintain them?
Well, in these cases, no, because these are usually donated land by retirees or those that are physically challenged or unable to do them. So no, these gardens are going to be ran by this volunteer network that I speak of that we're just starting to get built up as well. And so that's why this website is going to be a very important element to us, because we're going to have a volunteer network calendar, because that's where all the gardens are being installed, and volunteer work is being done, and maintained and harvested. But then we also are going to have the educational calendar, because we're giving classes and presentations all over the various locations and places. You got to have that calendar. So it's going to be a complex, you know, in just that organizational sense. But then we also have to have, we're starting to, you know, partner with the food receivers. You know, we're not going to, you know, we're growing it. You know, that's the part we're obviously here for. We're not going to reinvent the wheel of how to distribute food to those in need. There's a lot of places that people that can do that and have done it for a long time and are really good at it. The only thing that's changing is they're dealing with fresh food. And that's kind of thrown for a loop. I'm not going to tell you it's not, because some of the, again, legal issues right off the bat is we immediately went to children's homes, foster homes, those types of places, because we wanted to see a metrics of our improvement. You know, these kids are going now from, you know, processed food diets and whatever we can get them donated, all this stuff, to this fresh organic food. You know, are we going to see improvements in these children in some way? Are their attitudes going to get better? Are their emotions going to get better? Or at least, are they just going to be healthier, for goodness sake?
Wow.
You know, we wanted to see some metrics to see, you know, to get into the excitement of what difference it can make on other levels as well. But unfortunately, the kids' ones are the first ones to throw up legal flags.
Oh, really?
Liability issue. Liability. Are you going to be certified? Are you going to be USDA? Are you? And so now we got to go into all that. And so it was like, so now we're coming back to the homeless. Because the homeless takes anything, right? God love them.
Wow.
So, you know, these are the complications. Again, I point out, you know, this is such an easy solution, it's ridiculous. I mean, we have huge amounts of land. We have people that just want to give it to you. I mean, that's the biggest part of farming, people, is the land. You got to have the land, and these people just want to give it to you to feed the hungry. You've got people, all of these volunteers, because of the way our education systems are going right now, a lot of them going towards homeschooling, you've got to get a lot of volunteers out in homeschooling systems. Well, even if you want to go to college of any sort, well, guess what? You got to get a lot of volunteer hours. Boys and Girls Scouts and clubs, but also, you know, Habitat for Humanity has just mastered the volunteer system. So we're trying to get this massive volunteer system built up to get it all worked, you know, the harvesting done. So at the same time, fighting with the walls to allow us to do the actual farming to begin with. And it is a lot of hurdles. So here you have a very easy, simple solution. it's based on, you know, really basically giving and love, and leaving everything out, just keeping it simple, and you're going to reach all of these hurdles. You know, all of these barriers. You're going to reach them from children's homes who don't want to take your food because you don't have a USDA stamp on it, to cities saying that you're changing a residential zone to an agricultural zone. And all of this overcomes with education. I mean, in results, when they see that, you know, we actually can feed hungry children, which, by the way, Florida is consistently in the top five in the country of hungriest children. That's
wow.
Not a good stat to have. I mean, that's not a good stat to have at all.
Yeah.
And especially when you have such an easy solution, a 365-day-a-year growing period. And yet they're going to tell us that's why they farmed the way they do now, was to solve the hunger issues, right, to make sure we never ran out of food. That's why these mass production farming systems were invented and you know, supported, and that's why the government paid for so much of them. You ask yourself, did you accomplish it? No, clearly. We really haven't even improved.
No.
You know, we haven't really. There's still just about as many percentage of people hungry today as it was 20 years ago, 20 years before that, 20 years before that, percentage-wise, of course, it's raised with population numbers. But that's, you know, these are not things to brag about when we've become so advanced.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing I try to, in growing food, the most thing, you know, it is just as easy to take care of a chicken, hen, as it is a cat. Okay, it is dead serious. If you have been taught the right way and set up your system in the right way, it is that easy. So, but we've made it think that you having a chicken is you've got to go to agricultural school for 4 years to have a clue to what to do, and that's just not the case. It's easy. It's very, very, very easy. It's very, very safe. It's very, very quiet.
Jason, when I was a kid, I remember being told, leave the world a better place than it was when you found it. You and Jennifer have certainly been doing that, and I applaud you for what you've done. You're amazing. And isn't it a shame that you have to fight your own government to do the good work that you're doing? Thank you so very much for joining us. I wish you good luck, and please keep in touch with us, and I hope you come back sometime. But
Thank you so much. We'd be happy to come back, and we love to tell the positive, good story. So, you know, we plan on having many more to come. So.
Well, you're always welcome to come on the Commons.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.